As usual, I'm at the lovely Nairobi Street Kitchen and I have one of my bestest friends to join me on Unlock Your Soul with yours truly, Anthony Yasol. Today, we're really going to unlock your soul because, I never have a topic or theme for any conversation, but today I have one. And somebody sent me a reel. Actually, it was George Gashara who sent me a reel. And the lady was asked a question that is such a phenomenal question. She was asked, how was your life uninterrupted? And I have literally the poster child for life when it's interrupted and what that means to the human core and the human being. I'm with one of my very good friends, a lovely, beautiful soul in and out, the world's biggest Manchester City fan. And Juma there, by the way, is a footballer. So I don't know. What team do you support?
I have something for you later.
Yeah, she's... You wait, I'm coming. By the way, you know what I thought Ati Ego loves? Football. I thought it was one of those, she just loves... Where? She's got like season tickets to go watch Man City. By the way, she's... don't play... Look! My goodness! Like she's British, so she doesn't play when it comes to like football. And when she was in London, she asked me, what do I want? So to piss her off, to buy me something from Man U. Let me tell you, she told me, Anto, I have never entered a shop and bought something so quickly and left the shop. And by the way, she was wearing a Man City jersey in a Manchester United shop. So you can imagine how much she loves Man City. But also in terms of love, I think she has an understanding of what love is because she's gone through the ends of the world to be who she is today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome the very indomitable Ego Aobi.
Obi.
Obi. Is that how you pronounce it? Obi. What does Obi mean?
King.
Oh, for real?
It means king.
What does Ego mean? Yeah.
My full name actually means this child is greater than wealth.
Hey, this child is greater than wealth. Were you born in a bougie or poor or like, what kind of background were you born in? Because, no offense, only a poor parent would call you Ego. Obi.
Okay.
They'd be like, listen, we may not have money, but this child would be greater than the wealth.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's a myth because they weren't poor.
So it is possible.
Poor and then poor is relative though. It depends on what you mean.
Yeah.
Poor in spirit.
Poor, yeah. Poor, okay.
Right? You know what I mean?
Why are you poor in desire of just in spirit? Bushy people. Hey, they have a bushy person. He's even dressed up for you when we are marching. Mm-hmm. And one of our very close friends, who's her BFM, we'll be talking about women and the workplace and generally navigating life and having close people around you, is called Dorothy Orko, who's one of my biggest corporate supporters. When I mean that, and not to remove her as a human being, but also someone who works for an organization that has always had my back. So a big shout out to Dorothy Orko, who I also know is your BFF.
Yes, she is.
And Ego, let's start off first by, growing up Nigerian but British. How was it, growing up British and Nigerian?
Okay. All right. So it's good to be here. Thanks for inviting
me. You're very welcome.
It's an honor, actually.
Oh, I've waited to have
you
here.
I jumped at the opportunity. So,
by the way, she should be at work. But she's here with
no,
me.
Actually, no. It's my first day off.
Oh, yeah.
And this is it until the new year.
Awesome.
Okay,
I
so
love
I'm not,
it.
I'm not
so now we're going to spend more time together.
Yes.
Awesome. You are you traveling? Are you leaving?
Yes. Next weekend.
God. So before then,
okay,
we're going to hang out.
Okay, yeah. Right. So I was born in the UK of Nigerian parents.
Mm-hmm.
My youth or my early years were spent in the UK.
Yeah.
But, when you're of African descent, I wouldn't just say Nigerian.
Yeah.
When you're of African descent, you never really forget who you are or where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up in the 70s, there weren't that many black people in our neighborhood, or maybe not even in England, right?
Yeah.
My parents came to England for university, and then, of course, they had us.
Yeah.
As a child, I think I mentioned this to you when we went to Mlango Farm.
Yeah.
During those times, you of course, you know you're a black child and you come from an African family, but interacting in school and other places, playground, school, you never forget that, right? Because you're made to remember.
Mm-hmm.
You're called dirty. Mm-hmm. You're called, you know, like you have mud on you, go mm-hmm. have a bath.
Mm-hmm.
But home was my solace. My home was full of love. It was full of laughter. It was full of support, encouragement. So little did I know then, of course, you know, you're a five-year-old or a six-year-old.
Yeah.
You don't know that all this, what you experience at home shapes who you are, right? And then just kind of having the love and support of family and my parents and uncles and aunties, everybody's uncle, everybody's auntie, whether they're related to you or not, telling you it's okay, it doesn't matter. So you forget. It's almost like when I get home, I shut off the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's, you know, you go through bullying, through taunting, but I always knew that it was only for a season, like a few hours you spend in school or you spend in the playground and you go home. So
that, that's also being African, is that you sort of have the spirit of you just don't give up.
You don't. And it's what's instilled in us, right? So those values of, you know, and I remember my mom always used to tell me, always do the right thing no matter what, right? So regardless of what was happening to you, don't retaliate because you're the bigger person. Wow. That's really what it means.
Yeah.
And if we actually go to my desk right now, I have it written on a piece of paper on my desk. Always do the right thing.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter. It matters what people do.
Yeah.
I mean, as an adult, there's so many ways you can actually deal with that now. But as a kid, the only way you could understand is my parents have said to me, do the right thing. So you grin and bear, and then you get home and there's a lot of love, laughter, joy. So it didn't really matter. So those values of respect, integrity, contentment was kind of the fabric that wove through our family.
Wow.
Our Nigerian family with amazing food.
But and also, speaking of Nigerian families, and you know, since you brought it up, an amazing food, I hear that you can cook up a storm. So why is it that I've never enjoyed your food? Please explain to me why I'm suffering with bland Kenyan food.
No, don't worry. I'll invite you. So the thing is, though, I consider myself a social person.
Mm.
And I love laughter, fun. So I cook for people.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's myself, I just can't be bothered.
It's like,
I just make a salad or make a smoothie or eat at work. But I'm a good cook who learned to cook in her 30s.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
But also the lesson here is that it's never too late to learn.
It's never too late. It's never too late.
You, coming from, but now we have to, I mean, apart from being African, but really coming from a Nigerian family, you had to excel. Nigeria not a curry last.
At all.
There's no... You're not bringing bees in my house.
No.
Or it's okay, it can be comfortable. Let's be comfortable. Uh-huh. There's no bringing bees and A minuses in my house.
No, A's,
So did that sort of experience or upbringing sort of determine that you really had to be good as far as books are concerned, ending up in tech, but also... I don't want to rub anybody the wrong way, but one of the most powerful people on Google is that as a process of your upbringing?
I would say, I think it's a combination of upbringing and, you know, personality. I think your last guest mentioned something about personality or character, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I think some of those qualities are actually innate in us. But then, of course, coming from a Nigerian family, you have to do well.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an unpleasant experience, right? And I actually used it in my favor when I was younger. I was considered smart then.
Mm-hmm.
I was very good with maths.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I could actually gain favor and get away from doing chores by being so smart.
Yeah.
And I wasn't pompous or arrogant about the fact that I did
Listen, I'd rather go do homework that yeah. washed his house. So yes. I'll go work on my math.
Yeah, exactly. So I realized that I actually got a lot of brownie points and I got excluded from a lot of things. Maybe yeah. that's why I couldn't cook as yeah. a child. You know, I loved to read.
Yeah.
I was very good with numbers. My dad was very good with numbers. So it was almost, of all of us, actually, I think I was the strongest in maths and took on challenges. And I think I became his favorite because of that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Sibs. yeah, so they would push. So it's, like I said, it wasn't a bad experience.
Yeah.
It's encouraging you. Mm-hmm. And my parents were educated. Mm-hmm. So we could see the benefits of being educated, yeah. right? Through yeah. their standing in the community or their jobs, right? So, and you want to do well.
Mm.
You know, there's a lot of praise. And even when you didn't do well, it wasn't so bad. But we grew up wanting to do right by them, not mm-hmm. to please them,
mm-hmm.
but to do right by them mm-hmm. because we knew it made them proud and we felt good. We were praised. We were... you know, we had treats,
yeah.
we had experiences, you know, from a very young age, we do picnics, we mm-hmm, travel.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all because we did well, mm-hmm. right? So it wasn't the stick over your head exactly. to say you have to do well.
Yeah.
In cases where either myself or my siblings didn't do well, there'd be a tutor to kind of coach you. And then, of course, yeah, you get 98 and then they say to you, 98%, what happened to the other two?
Wow.
What happened to the other 2%?
And you're thinking, what?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you came second.
Yeah.
The person who came first, do they have two heads?
Yeah.
Of course they don't.
Exactly.
But you look back now and as much as it shapes who you are, but I think it takes a certain kind of person for that upbringing, that way of life to either yeah. make or break you.
Yeah.
Some kids maybe aren't wired that way
yeah.
to see it as a push or an encouragement.
Yeah.
Some may see it as too much pressure.
Exactly. Or traumatizing.
Right? So I think it's a combination of both.
This conversation reminds me about Bob Hart's Abishola, that show. And Bob walks in and they want to look at the kid's report card. And his report card has a B. And the guy's like, okay, that's good. And the African side of the family is like, what do you mean? B, our family, you have disgraced us. And he's thinking, what? Disgraced? It's a B.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't take... But also, I get... But also, our parents really do prepare us that, especially being of African descent, that nobody's going to give you anything for being
yes,
a big kid.
Exactly.
It's not the idea of having A's on your report card, but excellence.
Exactly.
That you should really... push to excel in everything
exactly,
that you do.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, there's so many avenues to succeeding in life. It could be down the academic path,
mm-hmm.
it could be down the non-academic path, right?
Yes, yes.
They're the creatives, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to go to university to
exactly.
get some of those things. Even yeah. these big tech founders, some
yeah.
of them
yeah.
actually didn't go to university,
yeah.
right? However, if you, especially if you're outside of your region, to do well, to stand out, to even get a chance, that's just the baseline, you know, first degree, second, and sometimes a third degree,
yeah.
right? So,
yeah.
and it's really preparing us. They experienced it either in a foreign land or even at home
yeah.
due to, you know, like, colonial times,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So they want the best for their kids.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a balance
yeah.
so that it doesn't break, you know, break a child.
I had a conversation with my mom. You know how when you get older, you sort of begin to have real conversations with your parents. And I asked her, why did you used to push us so much?
Mm.
I mean, for me, it was like it feels sometimes you're doing the most. And when my mom explained, because when your kids, parents don't explain context, you know, they see tomorrow. They don't expect you to let
yeah.
me explain to you what happened. No.
Yeah, yeah.
So my mom explained to me how her mom, my grandmother, had to sell, you know, illicit brew for them to even just stay in school and survive.
Wow.
And so for my grandmother, if you didn't stay in school, she would beat the crap out of. She would beat. I mean, those. She's thinking, I'm selling illicit brew.
Yeah, she had to.
I'm running up and down, trying to run away from cops.
She had to sacrifice.
And then
a
you
lot,
don't
yes.
read, so
yeah.
The and then the fact that she couldn't also take you so far. She could give you the basics. After that, you're on your own. So the idea of you flunking and not caring or not doing enough would bother her. Like,
yes,
do you understand
course.
What
yeah.
is at stake?
Yeah. Yeah.
So. People have to understand that sometimes for our parents, it really comes from a good place. So now, I mean, you have kids of your own, but then, you know, you're also moving up the ladder in terms of what you're doing. How do you end up working for big tech, and how has that journey been for you as a woman of African descent?
I mean, it's not been easy, especially so my working career has always been in the West.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, a year ago I moved to Kenya.
Yeah.
And then a few years ago I worked in Ghana for 2 years. So really of my entire 25 years of working in the corporate world, only three has been in the region. I mean, it's tough. It's still very tough for our women of color today to rise through the ranks. You know, to push yourself, you have to push yourself. You have to be seen, you have to be heard, but you have to be diplomatic in doing that, right? So, you know, going or working in a place where you're one, you're the only, be it the only woman or the only woman of color or the only woman of color in tech, it's it's difficult, right? But some of the grounding, the foundation that I had growing up, I think it actually, and of course other life experiences along the way, actually makes you a stronger person. And then you, I mean, of course, when you start your career early, you have to do well, you have to position yourself in a way that you can rise through the ranks. So things like always show up. When you show up, be seen, be heard. Look to solving problems. Because I find that, you know, when I talk to people who are in tech or people who join my company or some people I mentor, they always talk about being promoted. But I think it's more than that, right? If you show up authentically, if you do your job, if you look to solving problems, and through doing that, you build a network, you manage upwards, you display excellence in what you do. There's nowhere you won't get noticed without realizing your network is growing. People, your peers lower than you, above you, and execs, right? And then promotion comes. I'm not saying don't work for it, but that shouldn't be front and center, because what that means is, you don't have the depth and breadth of what it takes to actually advance in your career.
My goodness. Ego, I know we spent like a whole day with you making fun of Manu. I didn't know you were this. Now I understand why you're a global leader and you've been just holding yourself and you know. But then for someone of your stature, you know, I mean, I, without being judgmental, I would assume, you know, you sort of have everything figured out. I'm gonna move from this level. You know, my family, I'm hoping we can do this. We can go on holiday. You know, we can make certain investments. And then life decides to just throw you the big C word, big curveball. That literally disenfranchises anyone who comes into contact with it. We're talking about cancer. What happened when your life became interrupted with this big C word?
That question, right? That question. Your question.
And also, who are you uninterrupted? Because then you realize, oh my God, I'm actually not as strong as I thought. I don't believe in God as much as I thought, because why me, you know? Who were you before you were interrupted by cancer?
Okay, so who was I? The end part, I think I'm a different person, but when you have a strong foundation, I think these storms, such as cancer, can destabilize you. So I'll tell you the... So when I found out, fortunately, I was with a friend of mine and I actually didn't want to go for the test. I'm like, I'm too busy. I was working in London. My the hospital was in Manchester, so I had to travel back. Anyway, had the test and then they said, come back. For further tests. I didn't even think.
Which is always never a good sign, but probably if you're aloof, you'll be like, okay.
I've always been a positive, I've always had positive mindset. So I never think the worst. Why would I think the worst when I can think the best, right? So anyway, showed up and I was told, you have cancer. Actually, I didn't freak out. My friend was there. So fortunately, also, I'm a logical person. Like you said, I'm a planner. I mean, of course, I didn't plan for this. So I'm thinking ahead. What does this mean? How far is it? What's the cause? And, you know, what next, right? So they went through all of it. So I'm asking all the questions. And they're saying, okay, we have to start treatment in 3 weeks, no longer than 3 weeks. So it didn't actually hit me. I didn't think of anything. The only feeling I can recall was feeling deflated, like a balloon, like you let the air out of a balloon. And at one point, the oncologist had to ask me, do you understand
what is happening?
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think I gave like a snotty remark and I said, I'm highly educated. I know exactly
like
what you're saying.
Whatever happens.
I understand what you're saying. Anyway, so they had to start treatment 3 weeks after that. And I said, is it okay to travel? And they said, yes. I'm like, boom. As soon as I got home, well, on the way, because my friend was driving, I booked a 10-day holiday to the Bahamas. Because I'm like, okay, I know this is going to be a difficult time. I never met anyone close who had cancer. But you know, right? You know how difficult it can be. And I was ready for an unknown journey. So I couldn't say I prepared. The only thing I did intentionally was to cut my hair. So I had hair as long as yours.
Remember you told me you had really long locks.
Yeah, so I shaved it off because chemo basically wipes you out. It takes, you know, you lose your hair. So I thought, this is one thing I can control. I'll control that, but I couldn't control anything else.
Wow.
And then the reality kind of hit because I had to, you know, like move to the family home in Manchester and then start to organize things really quickly. I think I had like a few days to move my life from London back to Manchester to start. And then it started to hit you. You know, I'm usually quite, I still am outgoing. I'm self-sufficient. I'm driven. I can do things for myself. But then you become very vulnerable and helpless, actually. And then I realized, actually, as I go through the journey, I'm not going to be able to drive myself. I can't do housework. I can't do anything myself. So the planner that I am, using Google Sheets, I created a sheet, all my appointment dates, and I just, my announcement to the world, which is my circle of friends and family, was, this is the situation.
Who's doing what?
Yes,
who's driving me?
Exactly.
Who's cooking for me?
Yep. And I said, here's the help I'll need, because you do things yourself. You don't ask for help. But I realized that this 6-month journey is going to be tough, right? So had a spreadsheet. I said, I need 2 chaperones every visit.
Yeah.
Cooking, cleaning, you know, you name it, right? I need the help. Within hours of opening that sheet, it was oversubscribed. People were scrambling for space. I had friends come from all over the world.
Yeah.
San Francisco, Canada, Nigeria, you know, Ghana, you name it. Come to be with me on their allotted times, right? And then towards the tail, and that, well, that was, and then COVID hit. So, of course, it became very difficult. We had the lockdown, you know, nobody could be there with me. But I think in terms of personality, outlook on life, I wouldn't say that has changed.
Yeah.
And I consider myself a social butterfly,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That hasn't changed. The one thing that I would say has changed is I actually appreciate, not that I didn't before, I appreciate life a lot better, a lot more than I did before.
Especially the quality of life that we live.
The quality, little things. You know, like how, you know, you're in the corporate world, you're going. You don't stop to notice little things.
Mm.
So I would say I see life differently and I'm just grateful for life. Every day I say, you know, may today be kind to me,
yeah,
right? Because it's not a given, yeah, right? And then I think I'm also more accommodating, you know, because I'm not a perfectionist, because that's not a compliment,
yeah,
but because I'm so driven and I'm driven to excellence, I want to do the best, I want to do good all the time, be excellent all the time. Sometimes I'm a bit impatient with, you know, people who are, you know, kind of
lax
and complacent, yeah, and, you know.
We call them now, since you know a lot of Swahili, but I'll teach you a sheng. We call them mblainers.
Mblainers.
You see, from complainer?
Yeah.
So mblainer.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
because like, the boy is laughing.
You know, like you have so much.
It's like, oh, let's meet. Oh, you know, I'm like, why are you complaining?
It's raining.
Just come.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go watch a game. Oh, you know me, I think we should go. Yeah. Why are you complaining? You don't even know if I have something good for you. You're
exactly
just complaining.
Or, you know, negative and complain. And, you know, being entitled.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, the food today in the office, it has too much salt.
And you're like,
bring your food tomorrow into the office.
Season with extra pepper and
you
just
know?
Keep quiet.
Yeah, so
you know?
I think I have a bit more tolerance and patience because some of the people I kind of sat in the ward with, not everyone made it.
Yeah.
But I'm here. I'm still standing, right?
Yeah.
So I think I'm more tolerant and I extend grace.
Yeah.
And I assume good intention.
Mm.
It doesn't matter. You know, cut in front of me all you like. I'm not going to lose my peace.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lose my joy.
Yeah. That's a thing you learn when you go to therapy.
Yes,
when
exactly.
You realize you're not really even angry about your upbringing or whatever. It's just certain value system that you need to have that needs to change.
Yeah.
Like getting
angry
over everything, at everyone, for everything. I mean, just extend grace and then move on.
Yeah, move on.
Did you ever envision a moment where all this was gone?
Like
when you're at the ward and you're thinking, what if I don't make it?
Yeah, I did. I had a few close calls.
Mm.
You know, but for me, it was always my heart had to be right every day before I left to go for treatment, because you couldn't make it. At one time, I had a bad reaction.
Mm.
I was actually having a heart attack.
Oh,
they needed
goodness.
To reverse. But fortunately, I'm very observant.
Mm.
And I think I would call it a gift. My body speaks to me. I know when something is off. If I have something that doesn't sit with me, I immediately know and I take action. So I was able, I wasn't second guessing, like, oh, I'm not sure, or I don't want to disturb the nurses or the doctors.
Nope.
I'm like, something is happening. My heart is racing.
Yeah.
And they're like, how does it feel?
Yeah.
And by the time I described it, it was like code yellow.
Wow.
You know, they had to give some injection to reverse, and like all the doctors rushed there.
Yeah.
So I knew. And so that's why I never take anything for granted. I don't take the day for granted. The fact that we woke up, that's a gift.
Yeah.
When I ask a colleague of mine, his name's Mzamo. Do you know Mzamo in South Africa?
Yes, yes.
How are you, Mzamo? He goes, I woke up. And that so resonates with me, because we take a lot for granted. So what? I don't have socks because I'm cold.
Exactly.
I woke up though.
Yeah.
Put the blanket.
But also not even that I don't have socks. I don't have Reebok socks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or
exactly.
Like, where are my Louis V socks?
Yes.
What?
Exactly.
What?
Exactly. So, there were moments where I had close calls. But I'm just very grateful that I'm still here.
Mm.
And I want to be the best version of myself. One thing that has... I've always been authentic, but I'm very intentional now about what I do, about the choices that I make, because I may not be here tomorrow. So make right now count. You show up, you show up. Like if you ask me next week,
yeah,
what were the colors and the patterns of what you're wearing,
yeah,
now,
yeah,
I could tell you, because yeah, I'm paying attention.
I'm in the moment.
In the moment, yeah, being present.
Yeah.
Right? And make the most of the now.
Yeah. Make the most out of now. But yes, this, I think this is one of the reasons why we ended up actually connecting, because when you even mentioned that, you know, you'd survived cancer, you'd conquered cancer, I mean, I feel like everyone from that bus was like, eh, did you hear what she said? And me, actually, I remember even actually walking closer to you, I was like, now I want to hear her story. Because who talks like this? Is so interesting. And but also one of the things, just that nonchalance about it, but and not from a place of, you know, whatever. It was more from
a place of gratitude.
Gratitude. Like, you guys, let's not complain about how long this trip is. I've been through worse. Like, I've been through longer journeys and trips. But also something else comes out very strongly is your network, but also here in terms of the human connection that you make with people. And not just, you know, because I met you at a boardroom or because we had a Zoom meeting, you know, like you owe me or I owe you, but you've made genuine connections, genuine friendships. When I speak to you on WhatsApp and you reply in Swahili, I mean, I can just tell the genuineness that you have towards the people around you, towards the cultures around you, the respect and love that you have for everyone around you. That's, I think, one of the reasons why people were very quick to jump and just be like, what can we do for you? How can we support you?
Yeah.
But it's also a lesson for a lot of people to learn, to be kind, to extend kindness, to be humane. Because when we do need this, it will come back to us.
Absolutely.
When you look at where you've worked in terms of London, when you look at working in Ghana and in Kenya, and you look at how different the cultures are, how important is it for us to have a tribe that we can vibe with, a tribe of people who actually, who remind us of what it means to be human and to be humane?
So, you know, having a tribe, you know, I would say I'm blessed to have a tribe in every continent but the Antarctica. Right?
Nice one.
Yeah.
Because I mean, who goes there? Uh-huh. Where? Who's there?
Exactly. Right. So, you know, it's really... I have a bubbly personality. I'm very positive.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm positive to a point where people don't like me because I'm... So I see the positive in things. Yeah. I'm not saying
I've had those scenarios where people are like, no, but you don't have to. I'm like, no, I can.
I can.
I can choose to say
it's not a choice.
But
no, it's a
choice. This is why people are always taking advantage of. I'm like, no, because I know exactly why I shouldn't be screaming and shouting now.
Exactly. Yeah. So that, and then it's that, you know, like empathy. And one of my core values is respect. Respect, integrity. When you ask my friends or family, one of the words they would use to describe me, dependable. I'm dependable.
Yeah.
I show up.
Yeah.
I show up for myself, but I show up for people.
Yeah.
And it's not to be liked.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you like me or not.
Exactly.
I don't please that way.
Yeah.
You take me for who I am.
Yeah.
I'm a flawed human being like everybody else.
Yeah.
But I show up for people, and by showing up, by respecting, by extending grace, I think it creates that... that feeling of, you know, no matter what, she has my back. So, yeah. And then I'm not afraid to make friends.
Yeah.
I would make the move. You know, like, you know, you go to certain places and people are like, they don't want to...
They're so stuck up. Like, who's going to say hi first?
Exactly.
She looks like she's from my country, but I'm not going to go in.
Yeah. In Nigeria.
Especially with these African foreheads.
In Nigeria, they call it forming.
Forming.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, don't just sit there. Yeah. Do something.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm who I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes people may think, oh, dumb down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I would never dumb down for someone else to shine. So because I put people first, I'm a people person, human-centered approach, right? I think it kind of gains me friends.
Yeah.
People can trust me. People can depend on me.
Yeah.
And we kind of develop friendships, and it's your tribe, really.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I've only been here for a year. Although, I mean, I knew Dorothy you know. But I've made a lot of friends. I've made friends. But I'm also very intentional about how and who,
yeah.
right? Because what you don't want is for someone to empty your cup, your positivity cup.
Yeah.
You know, drain, yeah. and then, you know, all...
And then you're not doing anything about it.
Exactly.
And remember the lesson that she has to listen to your body.
Yes,
which is
exactly.
like, this is not good, this is not yes. a good relationship.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I should just, either stop it,
yes,
talk
exactly.
about it, or move
yeah,
out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, my life coach told me that one of the things... You know what describes our character, our personality, is when you leave the room and what people say about you when you leave the room.
Mm.
But in this scenario, it was when before you had even walked into the room,
yes.
and how Dorothy was raving
Aww.
About you, and she was like, because there was another Nigerian that we were with, one of the influencers, and when she learned the influencer was a Nigerian, the first she said, "Oh my God, there's a Nigerian friend of mine. She's British but Nigerian. She's coming. She's called Ego." you guys are gonna, you know, it tells so much about you
yeah,
because I don't
kind.
Have to ask you who you are because you know when you leave the room, what people really say, that's your reputation.
Absolutely.
You can put a billboard and say, oh, vote for me, I'm kind or whatever, and we will probably vote for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what people really think
yeah.
about you when you
yeah.
leave that room,
yeah.
that's
yeah.
who you really are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it important for, and now specifically to women, ladies who are. Whether in small or big tech, in university, starting off the corporate walk, for them to have a tribe of people
yeah.
like you do, have women around you
yeah.
who can hold you accountable,
mm-hmm.
who can walk with you,
yes.
who can feed you with ideas, with
yeah.
read this book, you know, go to this
yeah.
conference,
yeah.
invest in this, who can
mm-hmm.
help you lead
mm-hmm.
the way
mm-hmm.
to be a better woman mm-hmm. in the corporate world.
Yeah, I think it's important. So, you know, I talked about managing up. I talked about... you know, being intentional about solving problems.
Yeah.
When you do that, your network expands, your circle of influence expands,
mm-hmm.
you get noticed. And, you know, I call them, and, you know, this is stolen with pride. I don't know where I heard it.
Yeah.
Board of advisors.
Mm-hmm.
I have board of advisors,
yeah.
both in the workplace
yeah.
and outside the workplace.
Yeah.
So trusted family, friends, male and female alike
yeah.
to say, and you have to be vulnerable though. You have to be able to be vulnerable to get to that point where you say, here's what I'm going through. What should I do? Or what do you think? You've been there. How should I handle this situation? But I think it's important. But be careful and intentional, because what you want people who are rooting for you, advocates, sponsors, mentors,
yeah.
who care for your well-being, and you know, you need a balance, be it life coach, career coach, relationship coach,
yeah.
I don't know, parental
yeah.
Coach,
yeah.
whatever it is, but surround yourself with people who will lift you up. And it could be those who tell you the truth, like,
yeah.
you know, you keep doing this, you
yeah.
need to do something different,
yeah.
because
yeah.
you can't do the same things and expect different results.
Yeah.
Right?
I've always always sort of, I learned this, I think, probably even yesterday when I realized something about myself, where I've always been very self-dependent. You know, everything I must have an answer to. And I've been very open over the last couple of years, allowing people to tell me, you know, write a song this way. Let's change the lyrics to this. Let's make a move here. You know, do this kind of a video. You know, being very open to listening and just being okay that people can actually advise because it comes from a place of love. Because one of the things that I realized was I have a lot of people who tell me, Anto, there's a song that I've recorded, I'd love you to listen to it. And I never comment on because for me, it beats the point as to giving a comment when you are already at the end of the process.
It, yeah.
And really, the puppy eyes, it's more of like, please validate me. Not really tell me what I should do, because if I did tell you what to do, you immediately call me an enemy.
Yeah.
And probably your next song will be very powerful, because I'll be the subject of your song.
Yes, exactly.
My enemies are all around
me. Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't an enemy. I was just telling you what you didn't want to hear, but what you needed to hear. I have a new dear name for you. I just found it. Ego.
Mm-hmm.
Obi.
It's O-B-I.
O-B-I.
Yeah, A is my middle name.
Oh, so... OBI,
mm-hmm.
Ego OBI,
mm-hmm.
but now Igbo,
mm-hmm.
but with an A at the end.
Igbo.
The middle name comes at the end. Mm-hmm. The Igbo,
mm-hmm.
they're not Igbo. Igbo is now either the, because you're called Ego OBI,
mm-hmm.
and you, these are either your internal or international board of advisors.
Woo-hoo.
See what I did there.
Yes. International Board of Advisors.
So now you're Igbos. You're like, you know, are you Yoruba or Igbo?
Igbo.
You see, everything works out. And then if you know, if you put a G, they're your G's. You know, you're my G's.
Yes.
This is like now youth slang. There's a Gen Z there. Okay. He's telling us all about Gen Z's today.
Okay.
I mean, it's. I love that. I've learned. I'm learning so much from you. I feel like I should not be just chatting you up over nonsense on WhatsApp. I'm asking you, Ego, I want to change the world. What should I do? You're a sage.
I have the answer for you.
Yeah, you're a sage.
Seek
first to understand.
Then be understood. Stephen Covey, not me.
Yeah, but where is it? Because you read a lot. Your interactions, you know, the thing is that I feel people don't like this kind of attention on them. Mm. It's very un-African of us. You know, when someone tells you you're a sage, you're so smart. I love how you give advice. People feel very like
uncomfortable. Yeah.
Don't,
yeah.
You know, we're told, you know, as Africans, don't be the one shouting in the room.
Mm.
But it again, it's a reputation. It's what I see in you.
Mm.
Where do you get a lot of this balance? Where is it from? Because we're all flawed. We're not here to discuss our flaws.
Yeah.
Whatever.
But
where do you get a lot of this centering from?
I think there's a lot. So there's reading, there's books, there's interacting with people such as yourself.
Yeah.
There's, just kind of paying attention to what's going on around you and filtering, right? Because you get to a point where you know what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
So I think it was maybe 20, as we came out of COVID, 2022-ish.
Yeah.
Maybe late 2021. Somehow this prayer came to me and it was prayer, I don't know, manifestation, affirmation.
Yeah.
Any person, place, thing, or situation that doesn't serve me, be removed from me.
Mm.
Right? Mm. So basically, that means if I'm reading something, for example, I'm able to tune in to what serves me in whatever I'm reading or whatever I'm listening to.
Yeah.
And I'm intentional about not watching crap. I don't really watch TV.
Yeah.
I'm intentional about what I watch. And
if
I'm not aware of the content, for example, and I start watching it and I feel an unease in my spirit, I just switch it off.
Yeah,
I don't have to prove anything to anyone.
Yeah.
So I think it's a combination, learning from people, my colleagues, my friends, my family, people I meet, books or, education.
Yeah.
I think education as well. And then going deep. I remember I was talking to Dorothy last week on Friday because we had a mindfulness session at work.
Yeah.
And what we were talking about is a lot of people are well-read, but not... some people sometimes don't go the extra mile. So if I know I'm talking about something and there's some facts that I need to gather or evidence to support, for example, InstaDeep was acquired, a great AI startup, right?
Yeah.
Acquired an African startup, right? I can say that, but you give more weight to what you're sharing when you share the details. How much for?
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's something I've always known about. But then I thought, what if the question comes up? And I went and I read up about it, bought it, how much it was bought for,
because
I was on a panel, and it actually did come up as an example, right?
Wow.
So it's that intentionality about reading, learning, and knowing what suits, what works, you know.
Imagine even a small kid, your niece or nephew, looking up to you like you're the bearer of all information.
Yeah, I know.
And they're like, oh, auntie, I heard about, you know, this startup and you know how much I love tech. Like, how much do you think they made? Do you know how joyous it is you mention, even if it's a ballpark figure, but you're within and you say, oh, it's like 3 billion Kenya shillings, that's like $30 million. Mm. And how just feeling the information, how good it makes you feel. That's powerful.
And Google helps.
Thank
God for Google.
Thank God for Google. So don't say I didn't know. Google. Google it, please.
Google it.
Don't say you didn't know. We're getting towards the end of a conversation, because this will never end, because, you know, but do you ever, one of the things I want to know from you, do you ever pat yourself on the back and say, my God, I've gone through a lot.
I have.
My goodness, I've suffered, I have won, I have persevered. You know what? Good for you.
Yep,
and you
I
decide
do.
To indulge. Remember, like, when I came to your office and I was trying to, like, eat all the healthy things, and you guys were like, what are you doing? Eat
chocolate.
Eat anything. Like, don't be too stuck up in, oh, you know, can I have granola? Eat anything. And I was like, by the way, I'm going to eat it.
I do. Because, like I said earlier, I come from a place of gratitude. I'm really grateful for where I am. You know, we talked about the cancer. Exactly a year leading up to the cancer, I lost 3 members of my family, right? And then not too long after my mom died, I had cancer.
So sorry.
And then, you know, like health challenges along the way from my 20s, right?
Yeah.
So I've reached a place where it's like rewarding yourself. So for me, I take self-care, self-love, I take it very seriously. So I have self-care Sundays. Sundays, I go for a massage. I go to my happy places. And you know, I feel so blessed to be in Kenya or Nairobi. Well, Kenya in general because I love nature. I love water. I love greenery. And I'm surrounded by them.
Yeah.
So a happy place for me, for example, could be to drive to Shamba Cafe and just sit and just be there, or go to Karura Forest or go for a massage.
Yeah.
So I pat myself on the back all the time because if not now, when? If not you, who?
Yeah.
Right? So what am I working for?
Yeah.
And it's that appreciation and contentment. Because we could be in a place where we say, I just need to go one extra, then I will enjoy life. My motto really is to love the life I live and live the life I love.
Oh, I love it. And speaking of love, you are probably the biggest fan, probably even a shareholder. I wouldn't even be shocked if you have tried to buy this this club. The number one fan. I know Kenyans like say, oh, you know, no offense. But Kenyans like, oh, I love Man U. Oh, I love Man City. And sometimes, like, it's probably because your brother loves Man City, so you love Man U just out of spite. There's no deeper spiritual connection. Bro, Ego, Obi, Ibo, she loves Manchester City. It's not even a joke. So this is us in a van. Thanks to Google and Dorothy Oko, we're going to Mlango Farm, you know, and using Google Lens to learn more about species and plants and flora and fauna. And it's as simple as, you know, going to your Google application, turning on the lens, and you could search using a leaf or a root and you know exactly what the plant is. So we're doing that and enjoying that and sharing that experience with people. So we're in the bus. Ego has spoken a couple of times. You know, I'm here. This is how we became friends, I think. I think I forced her to get the tropical because, like, this is the most Kenyan thing you do when you're in a bus. You eat tropical. So she's like, okay, this is interesting. Until somebody said something, I can't wait for the Arsenal game today. Hey? Ego turned. Arsenal what? Manchester City is the best team in the world. Eh? And all of us were like, who is this? You see how people are smiling? See? You see? He's like, ukweli, it's true. So she literally, because we were like, you know, she's a boss. She like threw the boss title away from the window. Man City. I don't want to hear you talk about Man City. And she even told the lady, I think it was a lady or a guy, told them, wait till we alight. I'll explain to you why Man City is the best city in the world. So why is Man City the best city in the world?
Okay.
The best club in the world.
Okay, so what I would say is...
Look at, he's just laughing.
Okay.
He's on the floor.
So we're very humble. We're not...
time, by the way, I can't speak
We
anything.
Are... We're very humble and we're not pompous like our cousins on the red side of Manchester.
Hey, by the way, I've right? been beaten every day.
Right?
Look at... Mboya is saying, no, these guys are not that humble, right?
Anyway,
I'm only keeping quiet.
We don't talk too much. So, okay. So, my man's
because we're beaten so much. I didn't even come with a bag you bought.
You're
for
number
me.
Seven.
Because, like, I'm not bringing the bag.
You're seven. Oh, you're seven God. On the league table. And those who are 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
it's only a matter of time
before you knock
right.
them out.
So yeah, Arsenal, Liverpool,
not
I don't
Bombas.
Know, right? So yeah. And it's really only a 5-point difference between yeah. the top and us number four. So
yeah.
you know, we give you space. So yeah. anyway, this love for Manchester City began in the 80s.
Yeah.
Manchester City was not really a they were not a favored club, right?
Yeah.
Because Manchester United, very noisy, yeah. very arrogant.
Yeah.
You know.
And, I was in, yeah.
And they kind of call us the noisy neighbors. So
yeah.
most people I knew were Manchester United fans, including my family.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad was a City fan.
Yeah.
And this actually speaks to my nature, my personality. Man City got a rap all the time. They were the underdog. And just because they were, and they were picked on all the time,
yeah.
I'm like, I'm supporting this team.
I remember growing up, I never hear about Man City at
exactly,
all.
Exactly.
It was always the big four.
Arsenal, Tottenham,
yeah.
Man United, and Chelsea.
And Chelsea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I was in Manchester, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of see that.
So you pick the guy who everyone picks on.
Yes,
I root for
and
that
And you
one.
Know where that comes from, though?
Yeah.
I told you about, you know, when I was younger, taunting, bullying.
Yeah.
So as a result, I have this mother figure where if there's one person standing to one side, nobody's speaking to them, even as adults
yeah.
in conferences
yeah.
and things,
I
still go and I make friends and make them feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Someone who's new,
yeah.
you know, to the company,
yeah.
you can see there's a bit of a nervous look. I go and make
yeah.
them feel okay.
Yeah.
Where are you from? You know, what team are you on?
Yeah.
Introduce them to people, right?
Exactly.
So same thing. They were the underdogs, and you know, just started. They had a really small stadium on City Road. Old Trafford, by the way, is not in Manchester. Just so you know, it's on the outskirts. It's in Old Trafford. It's not in Manchester.
Mm.
But anyway, that's how I got supporting them, and they did very badly for a long time. But just kind of staying close, you know, I would go to games because their tickets were really cheap, whereas the Man United, only the elite and rich could actually go watch their matches. The regular people like
yeah,
me
yeah.
couldn't actually afford to.
Yeah.
And then, you know, through time with, you know, like good managers, they started to rise up the ranks. A lot of people say to me, oh, you're a glory hogger, only because they're doing well. Not
but
so.
But you've not known me all my life.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, they don't know, right?
Exactly.
So I love the game. And for a long time, I didn't go because in those times, a woman couldn't actually go. You know, my husband supported Chelsea.
Yeah.
I supported City. I couldn't go because a woman wouldn't go on their own.
Exactly.
But that's changing
safety,
now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's changing.
Yeah.
And, you know, football is such a... it's such a leveler because you have that one thing in common. You go to a game on your own, City scores and
yeah.
everybody's hugging each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And I enjoy the atmosphere. And actually, the stadium is like Etihad is like 10 minutes
wow.
walk from my dad's house.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call up Juma. Juma, please come and sit right next to me here. Because I feel like Juma is he has, he's shake. How much more time do we have? Like how many minutes? Juma, come here. Like five. You have, no, don't bring the chair. Just come sit next to me here. You just come and sit right here. So as we get ready to finish and get to know about the kind of legacy that Ego wants to leave, or you know, or that she is, you know, preparing.
Mm.
You know, I mean, we're all on the way out, but you seem to not concur with Ego as Man City as the best. Be very careful; you may just go viral for a lack of information. Here, take the microphone. I don't want to be a part of this.
Okay.
This bloodbath.
What team do you support?
I support Arsenal.
Okay, good. Well done. You guys are number one.
Thank you.
39 points.
That's also sarcastic.
You guys
know,
are number one. Yeah? 39 points.
Yeah.
We're fourth, 34. I think we'll do well. We don't shout from the rooftop. If you say Arsenal's the best, great. I applaud you. But the end of the season tells. Remember what happened last year? Remember?
Yeah, I do.
Exactly. So, enough said.
Uh-huh.
Okay, okay. Okay, I think comparing Arsenal last season team to this season's team, I can say we're going to do better.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, because
okay.
we're looking at 3 trophies already.
Okay,
because
okay.
I know from the point of Manchester City being the current best club in the world,
mm-hmm.
from the performances, that's how football is.
I know.
Currently,
yeah.
Man City is the best
yes.
football club in the world
mm-hmm.
because we tend to compare football with the trophies won.
Yes,
and,
yes.
The amount of maybe success from the players mm-hmm. and the stats. Football mm-hmm. is all about stats.
Mm.
So currently, I'll say we have at least the hope compared to last season.
Okay. Last season, the treble for us, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I know is mm-hmm. Man City can do a treble this season.
Okay.
But they can't go trophyless.
Okay,
so
yeah.
So either from Premier League
mm-hmm.
or maybe Champions League.
Champions League, yeah.
They'll mm-hmm. get something.
Okay. All right.
I called you here to come and explain this scenario, only for you to look at Ego's eyes and then go completely afraid. Just go, please.
I'm not scared.
Just it's leave.
Not, okay, let's
not,
talk about
Manchester. No. Anyway,
no,
Juma, stay with me here.
Okay.
Ego, what is your legacy? What do you intend to, when you look back, you know, at this interview, 3, 4, 5 years, when you and I are in London
mm-hmm.
Enjoying tea at the Savoy or something?
Yes, yes.
What are we going to look back and say we've been able to achieve?
So for me, personally, I want to be remembered for somebody who's impacted lives positively through my time, my talent, my resources, and my life experiences.
Mm.
And for my positive energy to spread joy, right?
Mm.
And warm souls.
Mm.
No pun
I love
intended.
It. My goodness. What better words than that? Nothing better has been said from the number one Man City. You know, when you spoke, I was like, but would you want to be a commentator, by the way, for football generally?
Yeah, maybe that's the next.
Yeah, I feel like we need to have like a platform, a space for professional corporate people to talk about football when we see a very different side of them.
Mm-hmm.
Ego, you're such a light.
Thank you.
Really, really love you. You're such a light. You're a beautiful person in and out. And I thank you so much for making time
for
schooling this Arsenalians.
Thank you for having me.
This guy came, I thought he was going to come with like, you know, Arsenal, but you know Man City. Then he looked into your eyes and he's like, yes, Man City is the best team in the world.
I only argue from the perspective of being a footballer.
But you agreed that Man City is the best club in the world.
I can't deny that for now.
Thank you.
Unlock Your Soul podcast on Instagram, TikTok, on YouTube. Please like, comment, share, subscribe, and tell everybody to hear more about Ego. Because I tell you, when you listen to Ego, it's time for your ego to leave the room. Unlock your soul. And anyway, now that we have established that Man City is the biggest and the best
club currently.
Qualified.
Yeah, my God, look at, people are like, hey, Ego, whatever power you have as far as football is concerned, please take this and make money out of it. I know the Nigerian in you can do it.
I can do
I
it.
I feel like you need to speak for like corporate, you know, professionals and be like, listen, we also can make noise. So that's it. Before we head on over and make sure you like all our pages on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, everywhere, Unlock Your Soul podcast. And make sure you like, comment, share, subscribe to this YouTube. And thank you for all the subscribers who have been joining the fray. But I have the word, the roomy word for Ego. And like I told you, when Ego speaks, your ego lives. So this one is so short and so powerful. If you are irritated by every rub, how will your mirror be polished?
How will it be polished? Is that a question?
No. It's a question.
Exactly.
But
so, yeah, yes.
Think about.
Yeah.
And it speaks through to
exactly.
To
that's so true.
True.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are never phased because you've allowed every irritation. And irritation here to mean every consequential and inconsequential thing that happens in your life. To polish you.
I love that.
So
actually,
you can see yourself
it makes
better.
Sense. Yeah. It makes sense.
So
yes.
Have a great.
Thank you.
Mirror day.
Thank
Look
you.
At yourself in the mirror. But you know, it was supposed to end. But the reason why I found this very powerful is because in Japan, for example, I was there's this Instagram page I was checking out. They have, you know how Japanese do things like way over the top? Like you can go up the stairs, but it has the number of calories you're burning as you go up the stairs. So to curb the number of deaths by suicide, they have placed, instead of placing people to actually like help people to not jump, they've placed mirrors in the train stations. Because they say that when you're about to die by suicide, before you jump into the rails, if you have a look at yourself and you really look into yourself, when you look at the mirror, you realize maybe I should not do this.
That's amazing.
Maybe there's a bit of hope for me.
So that's profound.
Goes back to if you are irritated by every rub, how will your mirror be polished?
That's so
keep polishing
amazing.
That mirror, man.
Thank you.
That's that.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Unlock your soul. Thank you for choosing Unlock Your Soul podcast, where it helps you to grow and, of course, unlock your soul. I hope you learned something new, something bright, something great today, and that you can also share this podcast with each and every single person that you know. All you gotta do is review, like, and share this podcast on your favorite social media platform. Also, make sure you check us out on YouTube at Unlock Your Soul Podcast, on Instagram at Unlock Your Soul Pod, and on TikTok at Unlock Your Soul Podcast. It's time